Ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by the Hagen Oaks Golf Super Shop, America's most awarded golf facility. Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Welcome into the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa, along with my buddy Scott Marsh, and another week of talking about golf. Scott, I don't know. We had some more rain this week. Did you have a chance to play at all?
I got out to the driving range this past weekend, which was a lot of fun. Hit some balls, and that was good to do, but I didn't actually have a chance to play around. I know you got out and played some golf, though.
I did. I was able to get out to Timber Creek. The sun was shining. It was a little bit windy, and so it was a little bit chilly, but boy, I tell you, to be out on a golf course that had drained remarkably well, and the conditions were fabulous at the golf course. I was really surprised after all the rain we've had. But
no doubt, it's been tough conditions. But, you know, Timber Creek is just one of those courses. They keep that place in such great shape. You've got to give a lot of credit to the team out there and just the dedication of all the people who are members.
No question. And I ran into a couple of members afterwards that I've known for years that were also in the broadcast business. So it was a good day all the way around. You kind of wonder whether it's ever going to stop raining. I mean, it's you know, every week we seem to have the same pattern, but I know there's some warm weather ahead for us. We might go from rain to 100 degrees, but at least it'll be different, right?
It's coming. And of course, next week being the Masters, that's always kind of the start of the true golf season, and getting to see the azaleas should make everybody fired up.
You know, it's amazing how it has kind of a visceral effect watching that on television, especially with these high def crystal clear televisions, and those azaleas just pop out, and it's really amazing. And what a tournament it's always been. I noticed the other day Gary Player said that when he ranked the four majors, he ranked the Masters as the number four. Yep. And I think maybe Mr. Player just has an issue with the Masters that I'm sure has something to do with something that didn't happen. But, to put it behind the Players, I thought that was a bit odd.
Yeah, no, with all the success he's had, and of course he's an honorary tea person, but as we got to meet him, I think he explained that he loves the inclusivity of golf. And so obviously back in the days when he played there and the membership, it's not a course that you and I are going to step on anytime soon. So
no, probably not.
You know, I think that's it. Not because he doesn't love the tournament. And obviously it's going to be a great moment again to see him and Nicholas and Watson, you know, be honorary tee people next Thursday.
You know, the name, the Masters, it was coined by Clifford Roberts back in 1938, but Bobby Jones was never really a fan of it. He just didn't like that kind of attention to it. But boy, when you talk about the Masters and use the name now, it has a life of its own, doesn't it?
Bobby got a lot of things right. That wasn't one of them.
Yeah. I'm hoping, I probably shouldn't say it unless I can get a hold of him on the phone, but hoping to have his grandson, Bob Jones IV, on for next week's show to talk a little bit about, you know, Bobby's reaction to developing the place and what it was intended to be and what it turned out to be. Mr. Jones is always a lot of fun. He's got a great sense of humor as well.
Yeah, he's great to talk to, and it's always the best time of year to talk with him.
On the show today, we have a couple of friends. We have Russ King, who's the NorCal rep for Callaway Golf and has been for many, many years. And Russ is very proud of the company he works for and very proud of the product that they produce. And I always appreciate the way he talks about the product in a way that anybody can understand what he's talking about, even though scientists and engineers and designers have spent years, you know, putting all of this stuff together with terminology that would probably make our head spin if we used it.
Yeah, the bottom line is he's got great equipment, so it's pretty easy to talk about. And the new equipment that we're going to be talking about today with Callaway, probably their best equipment ever. I can't wait.
Also on the show, Mr. Eric Lippert, the PGA head golf professional at Pebble Beach, we will catch up with him to talk about what's happening right now in terms of their continuing effort to get ready for the United States Women's Open, which is the first week in July. And it's the 78th U.S. Women's Open and the first time it's ever been held at Pebble Beach. So they're really excited about who's coming, what they're doing, getting the course ready and all of that. So we'll catch up with Eric.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. Anytime you can talk Pebble Beach, it's a good week, but especially when they're setting it up for a U.S. Open, everything that goes behind that, that makes it really special. And, you know, Eric's been a good friend to the show, and it'll be great to talk with him.
Well, just as an aside, by the way, your credentials for the USGA came in, and you've been approved. And for some reason, I wasn't. So I have to get back. Not that I wasn't approved. It's just that you were I saw approval for you and nothing for me. So I'll have to get back to them on that.
Something wrong happened. I don't know what. I'm not going to complain about it, but that's remarkable.
Well, you have something to look forward to anyway. We have a lot to get to today on the show, so let's take a break and come back with Mr. Russ King and talk some Callaway Golf right after this on the Golf to Go Radio Hour.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
You are listening to the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hello, everyone. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh and welcoming in Mr. Russ King. Russ is the NorCal rep for Callaway Golf, and when I say that, it's all really in capital letters because, I don't know, Russ, are you employee number three or something? You've been with Callaway a very, very long time.
I turned 60, Frank, in December, so I'm officially, I've spent over half of my life with Callaway. I had my 30-year anniversary in early January.
That's amazing, because the company, I don't know, is it that much older than that, or is it about 30 years?
So Ely bought the company back in 1983. He was playing golf out in Palm Desert with a couple of gentlemen that had hickory-shafted putters, and he thought they were novel. They were losing money hand over fist, so he bought the company for a few $100,000 and sold hickory-shafted putters and wedges for several years until really the late 80s. And then we did the S2H2 woods and irons, but the big breakout was the Big Bertha. He Big brought Bertha. In his friend, Richard Helmstetter. You probably know that name, Frank, but he was actually designing pool cues in Japan. You can still pull up Helmstetter pool cues, and they're very high-end and pretty coveted. But he came over, and he was our lead engineer at the time and helped develop the first oversized driver, which was the Big Bertha. And that debuted in January of 91 at the PGA Show back in Orlando. And that's what kind of sent the company on a new trajectory there, and took us from a little tiny company to a publicly traded company, and it really blew up. But when I started with the company, it was late 92. We were doing about $89 million. I remember one of the other reps in the area coming up to me, and he goes, you know, people think your company can do $250, $300 million. And I laughed at him. I thought it was the silliest thing. The big companies back then were TaylorMade and Ping, and they were substantially larger than us. But it was quite a ride for quite a while. Yeah, we blew up pretty quick.
Well, and certainly, if not the most, one of the top three equipment manufacturers in the world at this point. I mean, Callaway is just off the charts these days.
Yeah, it's been great. Our new CEO, our executive team is led by Chip Brewer, who came in 2013, and he is all about product. So he's just one of those guys that has the right vision, knows how to make the right decisions, motivate the R&D team, and the product has just been as good as it's ever been. It's been fantastic. So our market share has really been strong in all categories, irons, putters, hybrids. So it's been great.
I love this time of year because the new product is out, and getting someone like you on the show to talk about it in a way that relates not only to the weekend player, but to the technophile that you know, wants to know what's in the clubs and how they work. And when you talk about a great product, you know, the Callaway paradigm is this year's entry. And once again, a 2023 Golf Digest Hot Less Gold winner. Tell us about Paradigm and why you're so proud about it.
Yeah, it's been great too. And just to have the validation with the tour success, Frank, has just been, you know, a marketing dream really for the company. I think John Rahm came out of the gate strong and won at Kapalua the following week. Siwoo Kim won with a Paradigm. I think Rahm won again, if I'm correct, at the stadium course down in La Quinta. We had a non-Callaway staffer, you know, missed by one stroke to win Torrey Pines. Another non-Callaway player won with the Paradigm Driver at Pebble Beach. Sam Burns just won match play. I think we've had 8 wins with the driver. That's right amazing. Out of the gates, not even into April, which is just unprecedented. It's been great, but it's a pretty unique product. The driver itself has got a new technology involving carbon. So we call it a 360-degree carbon chassis. And, you know, the engineers get excited about stuff that might gloss over your listeners without getting too technical. It's pretty unique because there's no titanium in the body of the driver. When you look at most of the drivers in the golf shop out there, they have carbon tops and a titanium body, and we were able to eliminate most of the metal, really all of it, and incorporate 2 carbons. So the top is cosmetic, but the bottom that replaces the titanium has to have a lot of integral strength, and it's a forged composite we developed with Lamborghini back in 1999. So it's kind of a cool proprietary material that we have. Nobody else can use it. It let us get rid of all the metal in the head of the driver, freed up a lot of discretionary weight. The biggest problem that engineers always face in developing drivers is if you want to make a very forgiving driver, you're going to give up ball speed. A very fast driver is not going to be forgiving. And so this 360cc carbon chassis totally got us around that hurdle. It is the fastest driver we've ever made, and it's on average 15 to 20% more accurate than anything we've ever made. So
wow.
That's what kind of makes this one special. Yeah. And like I said, to get the validation on tour so quick with even a lot of non-Callaway guys has just been amazing. It's been great.
You know, and the buzz from the weekend players is phenomenal at this point. I mean, all you hear about is, you know, how easy they are to hit and how long they are. And actually, it's a really nice looking club as well.
Yeah, that the bottom of the club, if you take a close look at it, because of that forged composite, no two drivers are the same. They all have a unique look, which is kind of cool. But there's 3 different models, and the one that's going to be most popular for most golfers is the standard Paradigm Driver that has a slide weight in the back that'll let you adjust for draw bias, fade bias. The ones that are used out on tour and for the better players is called a Triple Diamond. A little smaller head. You can work the ball a little more with it, a little less spin. And the one that's been the sleeper is called the X, which has a little built-in draw bias, which most people can probably benefit from. Rick Shields is probably one of the more popular club testers over in the UK. I think he's got a couple million followers, but he gave us a rave review on the X model. We didn't expect it to do that well, and it's actually surprisingly good. Good players that are afraid the ball's going to go left, it's not the case at all. It's just straight, straight, straight. So, yeah, all 3 models have a fit. They're all, I think, by far and away the best driver we've made to date. So,
And you brought back the AI technology as well. And that's been a really cool story in itself.
Yeah. The AI faces are all developed by a supercomputer that I think we have a little over $12 million invested into, and teams come down and help input the data and all that good stuff. But the face is where we develop a lot of the ball speed off center, which is the biggest challenge for manufacturers. Everybody can make a fast driver right where the USGA tests us on the center of the club, but trying to match that ball speed and spin as far off center as possible is where the challenge is. And that's one thing we've found that humans just can't do. It takes a very, very sophisticated computer, and it's done a great job. So the new one has got the latest iteration of the AI face, along with the jailbreak that sits right behind the face. And that's the 6th year of jailbreak that came out in the first year of our Epic driver in 2017, but it's quite a bit lighter. It's shaped different, more of an hourglass, but that kind of gets rid of the distortion and impact between the crown and the sole. So all kinds of things going on in the drivers. They've become very sophisticated.
And mostly we hear about the drivers, and mostly we like to talk about the drivers, but a lot of technology also went into creating the fairways and hybrids as well.
Yeah, there's a full line of full complement of fairways and hybrids. They all have the same tech. Are different in the fairway woods. You're dealing with stainless steel instead of titanium. There's not a big advantage to titanium when you're dealing with a smaller head, but they all have the jailbreak, the same composite materials, all very forgiving and quicker than our previous models. And they go all the way up to 11 woods and some, you know, for people that want higher lofted fairway woods. So the hybrids are the same thing. They're almost like small drivers incorporating all the same technology. So, yep. And then we moved it into irons. So there's a full line of Paradigm irons. And that's kind of a different approach for us. It's a hollow body. So we wanted to take all the technology that we've developed in irons over the year and put it in a hollow body to give it a real traditional look. So if you didn't know better and you looked at it, it would almost look like a blade, but it's actually a very forgiving driver. It incorporates a lot of tungsten. Jailbreak for the first time that we have in the drivers is in the Paradigm Iron, making the club more forgiving, wow, a lot quicker. And they're high end, but they've done very well out of the gates too. So there's two models there. There's a standard Paradigm Iron and then an X, which will have a little lower center of gravity, a little wider butt, be a little easier to get up in the air, and a little more forgiving. So
The irons, obviously, the company is very proud of new technology, but you still have a complement of other brands of irons that are models of irons, I guess I should say, for different players as well.
Yeah, Apex is our forged iron line, which has been kind of our workhorse. It'll probably get cannibalized a little bit by the Paradigm. The Paradigm is such a great iron. It looks so good. We expect it to cannibalize Apex a little bit, but that's still been a workhorse for us. And then, you know, when you get down to that $1,000 price point, which is very attractive for a lot of golfers, the Rogue Max and the Rogue Max OS has been our workhorse. So that's still on volume going to be probably our best seller.
We'll be back with more with Russ King on the Golf to Go Radio Hour right after these messages.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
How about wedges? What do we got new there?
So your timing's great on the wedges. We're actually going to have, we just announced a few days ago, a line extension for the raw wedges that came out last season. And we're going to have a version with the grooves all the way across the face, which previously were only available on the high toe versions. Mm-hmm. So now you'll be able to get the traditional face or the full groove face, and along with a high toe option. So for some people that still like that high toe look, we'll have that. So there's going to be a line extension of the Roz Jaws coming out mid-month next month.
Yeah. You know, Scott, with your short game, I think that that full face lines across the face might be something you might want to think about.
Well, he's just said so many Fs that I like: faster, forgiving, full face, like...
The friendly,
I mean, it's just amazing. Yeah. You're talking my language here, Russell. I'm more than excited about it. In terms of somebody, we'll talk about another F in terms of fitting here. How does somebody get fitted properly for the right Callaway piece of equipment?
So we are out there, and most of the retailers are green grass. Depending whether you're a member at a club or a public golf, you can go out and we provide all the fitting equipment for most of our good accounts. Or, you know, you make an appointment, go out. Everybody's got monitors now, whether it be a TrackMan or a GC Quad by Foresight. There's a lot of outlets now to go out and get fit. And it makes a lot of sense, too. There's nothing worse than just going in and thinking, you know, the product that you need and going buying off the shelf and getting out on the golf course and finding out that you just spent a lot of money on the wrong club. So it does make a lot of sense to go get fit by a professional. And whether it's at a public course, private, or at off course, you can go find somebody that can accommodate you.
Russell, I'm curious. There's been, go ahead, Frank. I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go, Scott.
I was just going to say there's been so much talk about the golf ball and what's happening potentially with the USGA and the RNA and how that could affect clubs. And I know it's open-ended question. It's too far down the road and all of that. I'm just curious, as a manufacturer like Callaway, how do you take in something from a manufacturer standpoint about what may or may not happen in the future and how you're separating out? You've got so many great pro golfers who are winning tournaments versus obviously the vast majority of the people that you're building clubs for, like the everyday weekend golfers like Frank and myself.
You know, that one has caused such an uproar. It takes me back to 2000 when this whole USGA conversation with distance started with drivers, and Ely Callaway, our founder, got in a big dispute with the USGA over rules and driver speed limitations. So that really started with our driver called the ERC. I think when the golf balls, it'll have to be a two product category, right? There'll be one for professionals out there, which, you know, Scott, there could be a need for it. It might be a good thing for the game going down the road. Currently, the USGA has never limited any of the manufacturers for ball speed. There's never been a ball rejected by any of the manufacturers that goes too far at this point. So down the road, if that does happen, I think you'll see a golf ball for professionals. It shouldn't impact the amateur market too much, I don't think. It's interesting because I'm a big gearhead. I watch high-level motorcycle racing and car racing. But years ago, when, you know, motorcycle, the high echelon of racing is called MotoGP, but Michelin had a tire. and Pirelli had a tire. And there was so much disparity between the performance of the tires that we used to joke you were watching two different races with one race. You'd watch the Pirelli race and you'd watch the Michelin race, which, you know, I could see the USGA's concern if that can happen with a golf ball. You know, there can be some serious performance advantages for some players out there. Of course, you can't keep up with course design. So I don't know. That's going to be a conversation that I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about going forward.
We're talking with Russ King, the NorCal rep for Callaway Golf. You know, talking about some of the successes of the company, you've had successes recently with the golf ball in terms of taking on a percentage of the market that wasn't there before. Let's talk about your ball line, because I know you're proud about that as well.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. It's, like I said, going back to Chip Brewer again, he just, you know, one of the things he takes a lot of pride in is our golf ball product. Our market share before Chrome Soft, which has been out for about 5 years now, was roughly about 4%. And this year we just went over the 22% market share mark, you know, within a short 5 years. And it's all because of that product. We have a real state-of-the-art plant back in Chicopee, Massachusetts that we've invested over $60 million into. It's state-of-the-art. I believe we're still currently the only ones that test every single golf ball with 3D x-rays. So that if it's not a perfect ball, it's rejected. And I know right now we reject more than we'd like. It's very expensive. Uh-huh. Chip wanted to be able to say that nobody makes a better golf ball product in the marketplace right now. We've tested everybody's and they're all extremely good. But we can say, as far as perfection goes, between the core, the mantle, and the cover, that ours are the best out there that we've tested. And I think the real compliment for the product is on tour. We are the only company that does not require our staff members to play the ball. So John Rahm first had interest in our company because of the golf ball. We got him because of the ball. It wasn't our style to usually sign world number one or two players like that. They were very expensive, but he was such a big proponent of the golf ball. And that was Ely's big focus going forward that, you know, we were happy to sign him. But Sam Burns, who just won, Siwoo Kim, Xander Schauffele, a lot of the world's top players all play the Chrome Soft X and really feel that it's the best ball to give them an advantage out on tour. And there's no money involved. They play the ball because they want to play the golf ball. They That's really great. Believe it's a great product. So, yeah, it's been exciting and it's happened quick. I don't think there's as much consumer awareness out there yet as there is out on tour. So hopefully that'll happen down the road. But that's been a big focus for us going forward. And it's been fun.
And right now, at this particular time, you're actually running a special on the golf balls, correct?
Yeah, they're always coming and going. So there's always kind of promos on the ball here and there to be able to buy some and get a freebie in there. But those are just kind of intermittent throughout the year. So the ERC Soft is out there. That is a ball most golfers don't know about. It is a hybrid covered ball. A lot of times with mid handicap or higher handicap players, the tour balls that are urethane covered can actually be pretty unforgiving, especially with the driver. They generate a lot of side spin. So this ERC softball that we've made is right under that $40 price point, but it's a hybrid cover. It's a lot more forgiving with the driver. It's the longest ball we make for distance with the driver. And it still spins around the green fine and does a great job. And then we have the super soft that I think most of your golfers are familiar with. It was kind of fun last year. I think we were the first company to be able to claim to be the number one selling golf ball, not on dollar amount, but on ball units sold. We sold over 6 million super softs, which was the top selling golf ball in the United States, which was kind of fun to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking again with Russ King, NorCal rep for Callaway Golf. Russ, I actually had a chance in between the rain to play over the weekend and got paired up with a guy that just started playing because of COVID. And it made me stop and think about how the game has been revitalized because of the pandemic. What's your take on the state of the game today, and where do you see it in the next 5 years?
Yeah, hasn't it been amazing how the pandemic has just completely shifted the industry? It was really on the wrong trajectory, unfortunately, for a lot of years, and it just completely turned it upside down. So we're seeing the same thing you're seeing out there. Record rounds, I think more than even the heydays back in the late 80s, early 90s on public play. The private courses all have waiting lists to get in. All the manufacturers are doing great. Product demand has never been higher. And I don't think there's going to be a post-pandemic letdown. I think a lot of people that got into the game are really enjoying it. We've seen that about 30% of the new golfers are women. that they're loving the sport now. The junior camps are all full. So we are very, very optimistic about the game going forward, which is nice to say because that wasn't the case in 2019.
You know, I mentioned earlier how long you've been with Callaway, and I have to compliment you and congratulate you, really. I mean, over the course of a year, you'll run into some reps that are brand new with the company, and you know, some maybe the third, fourth, fifth, and for you to have that longevity with Callaway and to be able to represent the product the way you do, I've always enjoyed talking with you about not only about Callaway but about golf in general, because you really have your finger on the pulse, and I always learn something when I talk to you.
No, I appreciate that, Frank. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been fun to be able to be in the same area, too. I'm a NorCal native, and I grew up right down in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and my territory ends down in the Napa area. So it's great to be able to, you know, sell for a brand that I love that's been a huge part of my life right in my backyard. I mean, it's just been great. And like I said, the fact that the game is so healthy again and there's so many people into it and it's been so revitalized, it's going to keep me hanging around for a little longer, I think. Which means it's going to be a long time by the time I hang it up.
Russ King, NorCal rep for Callaway Golf Company, and a good guy. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today on the Golf to Go Radio Hour. Always, like I said, I learned something. I enjoy talking to you. And Scott and I look forward to having you back on the show sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Frank. I appreciate that. Thank you, Scott. It's always a pleasure to talk with you guys.
Great to talk to you, Russ.
I always enjoy talking with you gentlemen, and hopefully we'll get a chance to see you guys out on the golf course here when the clouds finally part.
Look forward to that. Golf to Go Radio Hour continues right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa on Sactown Sports.
Welcome back into the Golf to Go Radio Hour right here on Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh, and our friend Eric Lippert, PGA head golf professional at Pebble Beach, is with us. We're going to talk to Eric a little bit about the U.S. Women's Open coming to Pebble Beach in the month of July. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great, Frank. It's great to be here, and I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Nice to have you back. You know, with a little more than 100 days out, I guess the tournament is actually July 6th to 9th, but tournament week would start on July 3rd, and you folks there at Pebble Beach started this a long time ago, getting ready for the 78th U.S. Women's Open. Where are you in the throes of all of this right now?
As you can imagine, obviously, we're deep, deep, deep into the heavy planning stages and planning phases of all aspects at this point. Everybody that's, you know, the USGA is building their team. You know, they always have some folks on site well in advance, but that team's growing. You know, all of us that have a little bit more involvement in terms of the championship committees and the executive teams on the Pebble Beach side are starting to ramp up and gear focus now as we're transitioning into this year and getting closer. We're all transitioning into our roles and in terms of what we need to prepare. And, you know, it's kind of fourth gear, and we're not far from fifth gear.
Yeah. You know, when you think about, as you were talking, I'm just thinking about all of the different things that have to come into play here. Let alone the golf course and getting the golf course ready for these players, but transportation and cleanup and you know, food and on and on and on and on. So I can well imagine that your entire team is very busy there.
Yeah, everybody's staying very busy. You know, the footprint and is a little different than the footprint maybe of the men's open at the moment in terms of on-site spectators and things like that. But, you know, internally, I know we as a company are extremely excited, and we have a commitment to make this the best U.S. Women's Open ever. We are really excited to put out a product that is every bit as fitting as what the men's open is. And obviously, you know, we've got, you know, this starts our run of about 10 for the next, you know, 20 plus years. 2048 is kind of our, you know, if you want to say where that the 10th one ends, and I'm sure there'll be stuff in between that gets added as we get down the road. I'm hoping so, but you know, we're committed with the USGA for the next 25 years to host 10 events, women's and men's, as well as some senior opens over at Spyglass. So, you know, it's just really exciting. It feels like this is the start of that anchor site portion, right, that we took on. And so, yeah, it's really exciting.
And that doesn't go without an incredible history of USGA events being held at Pebble Beach over the years, including a number of pretty exciting U.S. Men's Opens. And let's talk a little bit about you know, Pebble Beach's ability to handle these USGA events and the history there.
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, the history started well back, you know, back in 1929 with the U.S. Amateur. And that really started that whole relationship with the USGA. And, you know, their decision to come out to the West and host a U.S. Amateur at that time really start to lay the foundation for the years to come and really help with some of the history of championships at Pebble Beach. You know, interestingly enough, too, through those times, you know, we had Marion Hollins, who was out here during that time, and there was a lot of great women's golf as well. So women's golf has also been a big part of Pebble Beach's history. And while it maybe hasn't been as well known at times, you know, because you have, you know, U.S. Open, the first, you know, U.S. Open at a public golf course in 1972 with Jack Nicklaus, you know, some of that stuff at times maybe has overshadowed it. So I think when you look back at history, we've had a great, you know, we've had a lot of great championships, USGA championships. At one point, we hosted a PGA championship in 77. But, you know, as we're talking about the USGA and our relationship there, we're 13 championships in various different sorts. You know, we had two U.S. women's amateurs back in the 40s. And, you know, just throughout time, you look at it and you can see the relationship growing. And to add another 10 to that portfolio is going to be extremely exciting. So, you know, it is definitely a very rich history when it comes to golf championships here at Pebble Beach. And I think the way that they present and what makes Pebble Beach special in that vein is that you have a golf course that is very fun to play on a daily basis, and it has plenty of challenge to it. But, you know, we don't do a whole lot different to it when we host our AT&Ts and our, you know, when we host the Pure Championship in September as well, the Champions Tour comes out here. Both of those events, there's not a whole lot of extra done. Like, we're not growing up rough and doing whatever. So you're playing a PGA Tour caliber golf course at a wonderful resort. And then it comes to the open time, right? And then the ability to ramp up and tweak the golf course to a whole different level without losing the integrity and the playability of it, I think is what also makes it special and a great choice for the USGA to use.
Eric, what does that process start of when you start transforming the course for an open like this?
Scott, it's a great question. That's already in process. So about, I want to say a couple, maybe right after the AT&T, give or take a week or so, we started growing in what is going to be the roughs for the women's open, right? And when I say growing in the rough, really what it is we're creating that, what that rough line is going to be. So growing in the fairways, I really should say, if I was going to say it correctly. So we start to lose some of the width of our fairways, some of them very meaningfully, like number 8, because it's so wide. Yeah. And it starts to really shape where the players need to hit the ball. And so you're already able to see what they're going to experience because that grass is, you know, maybe about a half inch or so, just a touch longer than the fairway. So those lines are being grown in at the moment. You know, the plan is that we're going to have, it's going to be very, very similar footprint to what was the 2019 men's open, with the exception that the rough itself, is going to stay just a little bit, shorter. And that's really just to help match swing speeds that are generated, in between the two playing types. But that's all. I mean, it's the same basic footprint. So again, the commitment is to creating something that's every bit the same from our standpoint and provides that same test. And I think that's what makes this such a fun and exciting event to be a part of, besides the historical fact that it's our first U.S. Open to host.
For women. Yeah. You know, it.
For women.
Yeah. And the great part about, you know, the process you're going through now and growing in the course and getting it ready is that the folks that come out to play Pebble Beach on a daily basis actually get to play not under those conditions, but, you know, they can see certainly where the fairways are, where the rough's going to be, and the rough is probably a little longer than they're normally used to. So they get to challenge themselves a little bit there as well.
Yeah, for sure. It always creates an opportunity to, you know, when you come back and you know, hopefully get your tickets and buy them and watch them in person versus, you know, the TV. But either way, you get to kind of compare and see where it is that you're, you know, where you played from and just see how you can compare against what's going on there. So it's a good, it's great to have it ready. And it does, it takes a lot of time to start preparing it. You know, it's not just as simple as, you know, spray painting a line and growing the grass over to it a little bit taller than normal. There's definitely a process of, you know, where you have to, you know, drill seed and replant some of the grass and create a different, you know, a little more, just a whole different grass structure to the, sure, to the rough to make sure it's healthy and full and thick and plays appropriately.
We're talking with Eric Lippert, the PGA head golf professional at Pebble Beach, about the 78th U.S. Women's Open coming to Pebble Beach in July. The notion that when an event like this happens, certainly all eyes are on it. You know, Monday morning when people, you know, are having their coffee, they talk about what happened, you know, at the U.S. Open, whether it's the men's or the women's, because the attention is so great to it. And, you know, the great thing about a golf course like Pebble Beach is that there's so many places to, you know, to make or break a tournament. You know, you think about Tom Watson chipping in on 17 to win the U.S. Open and beat Jack Nicklaus in 1982. And then Tiger Woods just going crazy in 2000 and beating the field by 15 strokes and being the only person under par. When we watch Pebble Beach on television, I think we, you know, it's our course, you know, especially here in Northern California. It's our tournament course. It's our course to go play. And so we have a bit of ownership to it. So especially when having played it, you get to say, well, gee, you know, that was a really tough shot when I played it. They made it look easy. Or, gee, I made that and they missed that putt. So there's an opportunity for the viewer to actually get involved in a way that that they can't on tournaments across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of, you know, and not to sound, you know, I don't want to sound or take away from some other facilities, but it really, through length and time and history, you could probably label it close to, you know, the home of American golf. I mean, right, in a sense, right, because you have St. Andrews, which is what everybody would maybe consider the home of all golf. And then when you think of the home of golf in the U.S., it potentially can't. I mean, it's one of the top golf courses that anybody can play. There's just, it doesn't have that, you know, the accessibility piece that the other courses that are phenomenal miss, you know, some of these wonderful clubs and private places. But Pebble Beach, to your point, everybody has an opportunity to play it. You don't have to be a member. You just need to have a phone that you can book with.
Yeah. Well, and when you talk about Pebble Beach and you know, it's iconic status, it really did bring golf to the West Coast, because as you suggested earlier, all of the championships were pretty much all done on the East Coast. I mean, you know, the traditional golf literati all those many years ago never knew that there was anything on the other side of the Mississippi River. So, you know, Pebble Beach was one of the first courses to host one of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. 1929, that was a big move to bring that over here, to bring the amateur over here. And obviously, you know, that's kind of that, if you call it the Hollywood era of golf with, you know, Bobby Jones, and just kind of that amateur golf was really the big highlight at that time. Right. And he was in the midst of trying to win a Grand Slam, all the things that he was doing at that time frame, and to bring golf over here really helped golf, I would say, not necessarily on the map, but yeah, you're probably right. But West Coast kind of got some highlights over here, and then you recognize the fact that, wow, this is actually some pretty incredible golf, and just kind of took off from there.
Scott, I know you're excited about the Women's Open coming. What are you looking forward to?
Well, just everything. First of all, just being able to go to a U.S. Women's Open is going to be fantastic. Eric, I'm interested in knowing just from the tee positions. You know, we're used to the men's course, and even out there at Pebble. Pebble's not one of the longest courses, but obviously, when you get it ready for a U.S. Open, it creates, you know, more than enough challenge. But on the women's side, how will that be set up? I know the U.S. Open sets those up, but do you have an approximate range of what tee selections might be versus when there's a men's Open?
Yeah, you know, obviously, you want to set it comparable. You set up a golf course in a lot of, you know, in all championships, you're trying to determine what's the best place, have the most variety of different shots and clubs being used, so that, you know, it's not just a driver sand wedge every hole or driver, you know, four iron every hole. So there's a lot of time and effort spent in doing that. As it stands, it's going to be somewhere in about the 6,500 yard range, somewhere in that give or take location. And, you know, we're working with the USGA quite a bit with our superintendent to really develop, you know, the golf course to play from that yardage. And I think it's probably going to be a fantastic test. You know, when you think of some seaside type of an area where you're really at ocean level, it's not going to be super, super warm. So the golf ball itself is right. Not going to just sail. I guess we would say it's not always prime conditions to hit the ball as far as Rory did yesterday. You know, there's no 400 yard drives. It's hard to come by 400 yard drive. Let's just say that.
With a little over 100 days left before it, it's probably not too early to start thinking about getting your tickets and accommodations and things like that. Talk to us about where we get tickets, Eric, and you know, what little events are happening during the week that we can look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, the way, you know, you go to the USGA's website there for where the Women's Open tickets are. There's all kinds of tickets to buy there online. Certainly do it that way. So I think it's going to be one of the more enjoyable tournaments to follow and watch to get tickets and, you know, come in and be a part of it on the grounds. It's going to be one of those where, you know, if you've gone to US Opens in the past, if you've gone to men's Opens, sometimes it can feel pretty, you know, there's a lot of fans there. In this case, it's probably not going to have quite that same footprint, but I think you're going to have, it's just going to provide some wonderful opportunities to be in close with the players and really enjoy the golf course as they walk around and play it. So yeah, to your point, you know, jump online, get some tickets, get them as soon as you can. Sooner is better. Always better to have them in hand and ready. There's also, yeah, to your point though, Frank, too, we have a lot of different little events that lead up to it and have different goals and different roles. And some of them are, you know, the unique thing that we do. And I think it's one of the things that, you know, a lot of courses do and a lot of places do this, but I think we leverage it pretty well in the sense that we put together some events that are really going to benefit the game of golf as well in terms of their charitable giving. So tournaments like the All In and, you know, we've got a couple of other events too that we're putting out a couple weeks, a week or so before that end up donating a lot of money to these and supporting a lot of numerous different golf charities. So again, another great thing to be a part of and another exciting thing. So,
Eric, you know, I'm interested. Stuff. When I came down for the men's Open, I tried to stake out a spot because, to your point, there were so many fans there to watch. You know, I was in that 417, you know, confluence there. So I could see, you know, two shots at once with the tee at four and coming back on 17. As you, if you were a fan and you know the course better than anybody, where would you head to, a spot or two that you think would be a great viewing
location? Well, I think too, you're going to see a little different infrastructure, Scott. So I think you're going to have some areas that maybe were not as easy to view from, that will be better opportunities. To your point with the fans, I think being able to walk and follow your favorite players is going to be a little easier to do. But you know, if you're talking about matching a great golf hole with watching some, you know, it just kind of, hey, I'm going to have my sandwich or my lunch and sit here and watch golf for an hour. Certainly, there's some iconic spots getting out to seven there and watching people hit from that top of that hill. And, you know, you're watching the wedge come across and the way that they flight the ball, just is there's, it's just a special way to view that wedge shot, you know? You know, I think the second shot on eight is going to be really interesting and exciting to watch. I think that's always a fun space. You know, we last year we did a restoration project on that green. And so there's going to be some hole locations that are some that haven't been seen in forever, right? For yeah. years and years. You know, back right, back left. And so we've created some more space on that green. So I think that'll be a lot of fun if you're really familiar with the course to see some new hole locations there. You know, anything along that coast mm-hmm. there is a phenomenal view. I'll tell you another really kind of unique and neat spot is kind of back behind 14 green area there where you can see them tee off on 15. You know, we did some work on that fairway on 15 actually too, where if you remember for a while, we had kind of a pot bunker that was kind of sitting out in on its own mm-hmm. right in the middle of the fairway. We haven't removed it, but we renovated that and revamped that whole area to kind of, and it all ties to the bunkering to the left now. And so it's actually created a little more risk reward. It's tightened that area up there. So, you know, that hole's been vastly improved. You can never beat sitting on 17, watching shots come in there and the tee shot on 18, right? To, yeah. You know, as far as watching a couple spaces. So I just think that you're going to have so many wonderful spots to view. So I know I didn't really give you much of an answer other than
the answer is everywhere, Eric. That's the answer.
You're right. And that's what I was leading to. That's kind of what I was getting to, Scott. It's a can't miss. The idea is buy a ticket, come out and watch, because I think you're going to be, it's just going to be such a wonderful experience. So I, you know, this is one that I would say don't, you know, sometimes people say, well, it might be more, you know, easier to watch at home or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not a chance. This is one you want to be here, be on the grounds, be a part of it. If you're around this area and you can make the drive over, you come over, watch it in person. That's the best.
Everywhere, everything, all the time. The 78th United States Women's Open at Pebble Beach beginning the week of July 3rd. Eric Lippert, the PGA head golf professional at Pebble Beach, thanks so much for being with us. Look forward to catching up with you again as we get closer to the tournament and have you back on the show.
Thank you so much, Frank. And thank you, Scott. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks so much, Mr. Lippert, PGA head golf professional at Pebble Beach. And thank you also to Russ King, the NorCal rep for Callaway Golf for so many years. And Scott, thanks much to you as well.
Well, Frank, it's just great to be here. Another great show. I mean, we covered the Masters, Pebble Beach, the U.S. Open, Callaway Golf. I mean, that's a pretty jam-packed hour and a great way to spend some time.
And again, next week is the Masters, and we'll talk more about the Masters on next week's show. Until then, Golf to Go Radio Hour, Sactown Sports 1140. I'm Frank LaRosa. He's Scott Marsh. Thanks for spending your hour with us.